Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and this download is the only extract the BBC has of this edition of Desert Island Discs. For rights reasons, we've had to shorten the music. The programme was originally broadcast in 1974. This is a recording as it was being broadcast, rather than the studio recording. And for that reason, you may hear some interference and some degradation in the sound quality.
As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
This week, our castaway is Britain's senior Punch and Judy showman, Percy Press. Percy, how well could you take to loneliness on this island?
I don't think I'd be too happy, really. But I would enjoy it, I'm sure, for a little while.
What would you be happiest to have got away from?
Modern living conditions, with the race and tear of London's traffic and general hustle and bustle. Perhaps it's because I'm getting older.
You'll find it very nice and quiet on the island.
I'm sure.
Are you anything of a musician yourself? Do you play an instrument?
No, I'm afraid I'm not really very musical. In fact, I sometimes regret that I didn't enjoy some kind of a musical education. I can appreciate some of the better class music. Wouldn't call myself a highbrow, but I occasionally enjoy a bit of Bach.
Did you have any plan in choosing your 8 records?
Well, yeah, most of them, of course, is from a nostalgic point of view. Take me back into parts of my life, many occasions which I've enjoyed.
Where do we start? What's your first record?
Well, I'm very partial to Shakespeare, and I love Midsummer Night's Dream. I always go every year to the Regent's Park Theatre when it was shown there this year.
Yes.
I'm able to pick the night because I live so near Regent's Park, and I'd like, for my first record, the overture from Midsummer Night's Dream.
And on a nice warm night in that open-air theatre, it is an enchanting experience, isn't it?
Yes.
Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream Overture, played by the Symphony Orchestra of the Bavarian Radio, conducted by Raphael Kubelik. What's your second disc?
In my early days, before I became a Punch and Judy man, I played a lot in musical, little bit parts, small parts. I got a great love of the musical. Of course, in those days, there was a lot of musicals. And one of the grandest real musicals, the Metropolitan in Edgware Road. And I very much like to hear Max Miller, Max at the Met. He's, to my mind, a very great comedian. Risky, but never filthy, like so many modern comedians are, not Max. He had a wonderful personality and certainly could put it across.
Yes. Somebody called him the pure gold of the music hall.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
That's nice. She was but a village maiden. Who's to say she was to blame? But alas, a wicked squire took away her honest name. So she journeyed up to London, thinking to forget her shame, when another wicked squire took away her other name. Here, this is... I like the girls who do. I like the girls who don't. I hate the girl who says she will, and then she says she won't. But the girl I like the best of all, and I think you'll say I'm right, is the girl who says she never does, but she looks as though she might. Here! This is...
Max at the Met. Percy, are you a Londoner?
Oh, yes, I was born in Baker Street.
Mm-hmm. Any precedent in the family for the entertainment business?
None whatsoever. My people are in the building business. In fact, they had a business in Crawford Street, Marylebone.
You told us that as a youngster you played small parts in music hall sketches and so on. Was that your first job when you left school?
No. My first job, the only thing I was any good at school was art. And the careers master at the school, I went to a church school, by the way, not very far from here, St. Mary Magdalene's, Osnaburg Street.
Yes.
And the master used to find the boys' jobs. He got, because of my art, he got me a job to learn the art of mezzotint printing.
Putting the colour on the stone?
Yes, I know. Well, but actually, of course, mixing the colour as well and doing all the odd jobs you do at start as more or less an apprentice.
Yes.
But the paint, mixing of this colour, affected my chest. And I became ill, and the doctor advised that I have to leave that job and find a more open-air life.
Yes.
So then there was a period, of course, of going... This was during World War One, of course, because when war broke out, I was 12, you see. It was to be about 1916 when I started work.
So what did you do when you left the mezzotinting business?
Well, I had a period of many... I worked as a lift boy at Carmelite House, got another job as a commie waiter at Simpson's Restaurant in the Strand. That was a great thrill, because I used to put on... One of the things was putting on Jimmy Wilde's overcoat. And, of course, he was the champion at that time, and it was a great thrill to put on him. And several other jobs. I didn't last any of them very long, until I got the Fours, the picture dealers in Piccadilly. There again, art, you see.
Yes.
While I was there, I used to, at lunchtime, go up to Berwick Street Market. My mother used to give me a shilling for my lunch. And I used to buy fruit and what have you. And I used to watch the street entertainers. Ventriloquists, handcuff kings. The magic particularly attracted me, and I'd learned. I used to watch one particular conjurer many, many times. And I learned his tricks, and I practiced them. I could do them, so... Eventually, because I started off doing a few magic, which I found I could do very well.
Yes, indeed. I know you are a very accomplished conjurer and illusionist, indeed. So you started doing the bits of music hall work as well?
Yeah, oh, yes. For the music hall jobs, I had a bike. I used to cycle to the various theatres, like the Bedford, or sometimes as far away as the Queen's Poplar, see? And changing on the bike, you know, and just, taking the tires on one toes. Because frequently when you ride with the theatre, you don't have very, very much time. Of course, I only had these three little parts. Page boy, nothing to say there in one scene. Telegram boy in another, which I had a word to say. I used to have to point to the prisoners in the dock, which was novel and Jerry. You look at that funny face, look at that funny dial. If I had a face like that, I'd pawn it. I used to say, pick an Arnie, open your message. And I used to put my fingers up through my nose. And they used to get a very big laugh. We wouldn't today, of course, but it in those days.
Yes. And you used to do your conjuring where? In clubs?
Clubs, yes, which was many, working men's clubs, seven and six at a time. And, of course, Christmas time, there was a lot of schools, Christmas breaking up parties, which you did a much longer show and got a much bigger fee, like a guinea or guinea and a half, you see. Of course, you were getting quite classes up, but you had to do much longer. And it was there, I got my first introduction to Punch and Judy at these schools. Because frequently there would be a Punch and Judy operator, a man named Sam Bridges.
Yes.
Who used to operate in Camberwell and Brixton. And I used to help him pack up, not with any idea of taking up Punch, but simply because he was a nice old chap, and we used to go and have a drink after the show. He used to say, you want to think about taking up Punch and Judy, but at that time I wasn't a bit interested. I was more engrossed in the magic, really.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you decide that you wanted to be a punch man?
Well, that occurred very, very suddenly. One day I was walking through Berners Street, and a firm of music publishers named Kerwin and Company had a window display of hand puppets. I became rooted to this window display, and I looked at it, and then for the first time I saw puppets in another light altogether. And I thought, here's something I can do something with. And I thought, I'll do a modern Punch and Judy show. And I knew where, of course, to find old Sam Bridges, because every Thursday he was at Brixton Market. And that week, I went and sorted out old Sam and said, Sam, I'm going to take up Punch and Judy. He said, good for you, Percy. You'll find you'll always get a living. And incidentally, that's been very true.
Yes.
Never looked back since.
You're a Punch and Judy man, so let's break off there for your third record. What's that be?
My Blue Heaven. And, there used to be a man at that time called Whispering Smith.
Whispering Jack Smith.
Marvellous.
We'll lead you to my blue heaven. You'll see our smiling face, a fireplace, a cozy room. my blue.
Whispering Jack Smith. Now, when you started in the Punch and Judy business, you could set up the booth more or less on any street corner, but I suppose the noise and traffic has long ago put a stop to that sort of thing.
Oh, it has, yes. Of course, Punch is covered by certain acts of Parliament, you know.
Is he?
Yes. For instance, we can do a Punch and Judy in any churchyard in the country, and that goes right back to Charles II.
Now, when you started, you had to learn to use the swazzle for Mr. Punch's voice. What does a swazzle look like?
Well, it's a piece of metal, which is rather closely guarded secret.
Yes.
It's a non-corrosive metal, by the way, see?
Mm-hmm.
You see? And a piece of tape, simple piece of tape.
Isn't there a great danger you're going to swallow it?
Well, I've never swallowed one. I've got it down here and managed to score.
Halfway?
Yes. And one of my sons, he got it well down and while he was doing the show, and he actually, inside the booth, had to get on his head, and he got it down that way, and then still continued with the performance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you got your swazzle with you?
Yes.
Let's just hear a little bit of Mr. Punch's voice. It's a wonderful sound, Percy. It takes us all back to childhood. It really does. So, you used to work on all sorts of pitches.
Yes.
When did you move to a settled place?
Well, I've been rather settled for many, many years now. Like Hastings, I've been for 23 years, but I've also had seasons in Deal, Ramsgate, Herne Bay, just to mention a few of them.
Yes.
Of course, some of the West Country resorts. But principally around the southeast.
And in the winter?
In the winter. Well, I operate at Madame Tussauds in the winter, you see.
Yeah.
Together with my sons. We start there mid-December until about the middle of January, doing 5 performances each day. Short performances.
And children's parties, of course.
Oh, yes, children's parties, including the Lord Mayor of London's annual children's party every year. I've lost count of how many years I've been to the Mansion House.
Let's have record number 4 now. What's that to be?
I'd very much like to hear that very great artist, Gracie Fields, sing a lovely number, The Punch and Judy Show.
With a blow, Punch laid him low, and he is seen no more. Now the show is very nearly over, how we hate to see it end. All the figures come back for the finish, even men and gracious men. Of all the things that tickled every fancy in the days of long ago, there were none that made us quite so happy as the Punch and Judy Show.
Gracie Fields. During the war, Percy, you played Punch and Judy to the forces, and I believe you switched the script, brought it up to date. You had Hitler as one of the characters.
That's quite right. It suddenly struck me that Punch has got to go away from me. His Elizabethan motley. And a battle dress. So I set to and made a battle dress for him. And Judy, I promoted her to a nappy. I deleted the policeman and made him a red cap, which incidentally became a very great success every time he got knocked down, particularly when he was showing it to the forces. And the clown was the army cook, which brought in a lot of army gags.
Yes. You say you have 2 sons, they're both doing Punch and Judy, aren't
they? Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So you've
yes.
started a dynasty, really.
Now, yes, yes.
You mentioned Charles II.
Yes.
How far back in history does Punch and Judy go?
Well, of course, the first record of Punch is dear old Sam Pepys, written in his diary, the fact that he saw a puppet show in Covent Garden in May 1662.
But before the days of Pepys, Punch and Judy had come from Italy.
Oh,
it
yes.
It wasn't
yes.
Italian, it's part of the Commedia dell'arte.
Yes, yes, quite, really? Yes. Of course, Punch is really all over the world, you see. I mean, he's in Germany, it's Kasper, and it's Kasperl in Austria, in Turkey, Karagöz, Jan Klansen in Holland, you see, Polichinelle in France, and more or less all over.
It's a very horrific story. That villainous Mr. Punch kills his wife, he kills the doctor, he kills the policeman, he hangs the hangman, he throws his baby downstairs.
Do children ever try to stop him?
Oh, no, no, no. Funny, they all finish up on Punch's side. Yes. But Punch, you know, really is akin to God. Because, you see, Punch, he's no time for nagging women. So, wallop, crying babies, right? Out the window, down the cell. The law, of course, no time for the law, or medicine. And in the original play, you have a fight with the devil, again, of course, from which Punch scored.
He vanquishes the devil.
Yeah.
Is Punch still as popular as he ever was?
Oh, I should think so, yeah. Yes, we get in very big demand all over the place. Dozens and dozens of holiday camps all over the country, and they nearly all have a Punch and Judy operator during the season, you see. So there's really quite a few.
Good, good. Let's have record number 5, Percy. Watch that.
I think I'd very much like to hear Webster Booth singing that beautiful ballad, Because.
Through light and darkness, all time to be and pray, his love may make our love divine.
Percy, you were talking about the various versions of Punch that goes on in other countries. You've played in a number of countries yourself, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes.
The British Punch.
Yes, yes, the real tradition. In fact, when I go abroad now, it is solely for the purpose to present traditional British Punch and Judy.
Which countries have you
been
to?
Well, I've been to France and Monaco. I was there for a British week. I was performing in the Casino Gardens there. Very, very popular, the show was. And then also Germany.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, last year I was in Germany, Munich, in the Strad Museum, which incidentally is the largest puppet museum in the world. But of course, my great event last year was taking Punch and Judy to Japan.
To Japan?
For 3.5 weeks.
Yes.
Played both the islands, north and two islands, 6 cities, 22 performances. It was a tremendous success because the whole of Japan had never seen a Punch and Judy. Punch is really such a visual entertainment. I have no qualms wherever I take it, any part of the world, because people can follow the action.
Of course.
Yes, yes.
Let's have record number 6.
Well, I've been in Japan. I'd like an excerpt from the Mikado. Now the flowers that bloom in the spring.
The flowers that bloom in the spring, tra-la, we promise of merry sunshine. As we merrily dance and we sing, tra-la, we welcome the hope that they bring. Tra-la, of a summer of roses and wine, of a summer of roses and wine. And that's what we mean when we say that a thing is welcome the flowers that bloom in the spring. Tra-la-la-la-la, the flowers that bloom in the spring, colour, have nothing to do with the case. I've got to take under my wing, colour, a most ineffective old thing, colour, with a caricature of a face. We're the caricature of a face. And that's what I mean when I say all I see. Oh, bother the flowers that bloom in the spring. La 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 la, la 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 la. Oh, bother the flowers that spring.
The flowers that bloom in the spring, Thomas Rand and Peter Pratt. On this desert island, Percy, would you be responsible?
You've been listening to a download from the Desert Island Discs archive. Unfortunately, this extract from the original programme is the only material remaining in the BBC archives. For more downloads, please visit the Radio 4 website.